fine.
Is there stuff to talk about that isn't the complete history of PC castle seizing strategy games?
It's July 15th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 34. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Reckin.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Hello.
Hey! Video games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess we can start off, Nick and I, talking about the California Extreme.
Extreme!
The most extreme of all Californias.
Yeah.
It's a annual arcade and pinball show down in Santa Clara, which is the middle of nowhere, basically. Although, I guess AMD and Yahoo are, like, next door.
Yeah.
For some reason.
And a roller coaster.
And a roller coaster. There's a California theme park there as well.
Yeah.
So that's weird.
It's a theme park, though, is not called California Extreme.
It's called California Adventure.
Yeah.
Wait, like Disney's California Adventure? The Disneyland thing?
No, this is Great America.
This is Great America.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't go to any of these fucking places.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's Great America.
Yeah.
California right. Adventure. Yeah, not the same.
No, totally wrong.
California Extreme, also not to be confused.
California
Extreme is right next to Great America, which is a competitor to California Adventure.
Right.
Right.
Anyway, so we went to this thing. It was about arcade stuff. It was pretty cool. I'd never been there before. I was actually really pleasantly surprised. I didn't really know what to expect, but it was good. It was just basically one big room full of arcade cabinets and crazy pinball machines.
So like a video arcade.
Like a video arcade, but like with tons of pinball also, which I didn't play any of, actually.
Right.
Like actual pinball machines, they were just there for the aesthetics.
Yeah.
I don't know. Pinball's weird. I don't really understand the appeal of it. And obviously,
it's got all your favorite TV shows themed right. and done up in The Sopranos pinball. How can you not be into The Sopranos pinball?
No, I mean, people who are good at pinball, actually, you can be good at it.
No, I'm sure you can.
Well, it's one of the,
true.
Feels like it's actually just Peggle.
Yeah.
Where
right.
you just sort of pick a thing and let a thing go. But you can.
I get a little bit out of pinball.
You can know what you're doing.
I enjoy a pinball.
It's funny that video games are such a poor medium for adapting things and pinball is like several steps below that.
Yeah. I played
we
Roller Coaster
put a
Tycoon
of Batman
pinball.
On it. Yeah, Roller Coaster Tycoon is hilarious because that's a pinball adaptation of a video game.
Yeah, it was interesting. When you scored a point, it was like 15 new visitors in your park.
Oh, good.
Just
good
like
job.
Random.
It's so good at running a theme park, Nick.
Yeah, I know.
You got 15 visitors.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was there.
There were other interesting things, though.
Yeah, there were other crazy things. It was interesting, actually. The arcade stuff is all. I mean, first of all, like I never really went to arcades very much as a kid. Like I didn't really have like arcade culture was never something that intersected with my life very much. But as compared to my friends, you know, who went to arcades a lot more, and so for me, stuff like this is sort of purely like historical. It's interesting because it's I play all these games without very much nostalgia. It's more just kind of like interest. Like I think it's really interesting how, like coming in contact with this whole area of games that
it was like walking into a museum.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, and I find it interesting for that reason. Mm-hmm. But it's also cool because it means that I don't really have a lot of patience for games that are just terrible now.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's why it felt
of
like a museum to me, because it was like the boring exhibit. You know what I mean?
Wow. But I mean, when you do find something that's cool, it makes it really awesome.
Oh, sure. Yeah. There were some really like that, good games. But
I spent probably a fucking hour playing this.
More than that. We were there for 6 hours. I think you were
Clacks.
There for at least for three.
Playing Clax?
Clax, which I guess was also on the Atari and some other systems. I don't know. But it's basically a match three falling blocks puzzle. I guess it was 1989 or something. So, you know, before the days when PopCap just ripped off everyone else. In fact, I'm surprised PopCap hasn't ripped off this game because they've done it to most of them. But it was really fun. I really would like to find it on like some kind of Atari or Midway compilation. I think it was originally Atari and then Midway ended up owning the rights somehow.
Mm. Like it seems to happen with a lot of those games.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Midway. Yeah. All that Midway game stuff that transferred over. But that game is fun. I would recommend it if someone likes matching puzzle falling blocks games, which I sometimes do. And then the craziest thing we found, this was amazing. We probably this for a good hour too.
Yeah.
Well, I forget what it was called, but it was
Telequiz.
Like, Telequiz. It was amusing, educational Telequiz.
Amusing. Yes.
And
educational.
It was a, it's
God.
It was crazy. It's this crazy quiz cabinet from like 1946. It predates electronic video games. It's all based on slides, photocells, like vacuum tubes.
Yeah.
And, like all its
amplifiers and weird gadgets.
Yeah. And it basically what it does is it puts up a slide with a question on the screen and frequently an illustration as well in amazing like Fallout esque, you know, line art illustrative style, which is really cool. And this thing looks like it belongs in Fallout 2, the machine
itself.
It does.
Yeah, that's the first thing I said when I saw it.
And it asks you trivia questions with six multiple choice answers, and then you hit button 1 through 6, you know, physical buttons 1 through 6 on the cabinet, and you get it right or you get it wrong, and it scores you based on how long it took you to get it right, if you got it right at all. And then it asks you 5 questions, and then you have to give it another dime, although it was on free play. And it was crazy. It was an amazing, relic for many reasons. I mean, one for the technological reason of just this is, you know, it's from the age when the hardware had to be built solely and completely for the software and nothing else. I mean, you know, it's even more so than like a punch card machine. I mean, this thing is so specifically designed for this purpose.
Yeah. And we played it so much that it broke, and then it was interesting because the guy who owned it came over and opened up the cabinet to fix it, and I took a few pictures of that, actually. I'll post them on the forums.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. Put them in the DLC thread.
Yeah.
Just as a reminder, by the way, we now have a thread up on the forums in the episode sub-forum that now we're trying to remember to put all the stuff that we mention, you know, pictures and links and stuff. And once again, if we forget anything, just let us know. But yeah, this thing was crazy. There were some amazing questions too. I mean, beyond the technological aspect, one of the other amazing things was just due to the historical nature of the questions.
Yeah.
It looks like Nick is sorting through photos of some of the better ones.
I took photos of like maybe half of the 1,000 questions that we had.
Well, you were late for a lot of them.
I know. I missed some of the best ones.
You know, my favorite
the most
one.
Racist ones.
No. I did get a picture of this one.
Oh, did you?
My favorite one was true or false. India and China are industrial nations. And the answer is false.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
There are some good ones.
Did you guys guess false? Did you try?
Yeah, we said false and we got it right. In fact, I have evidence of it right here. There's me pressing the two false.
That's sad. I bet this computer from the 40s would want me to say false.
Exactly.
It does.
Yep.
This is terrible.
Yep. It's and check out what it looks like.
Whoa!
It's awesome.
You shouldn't be doing this to everyone listening at home. Well, look at this amazing thing. It does look like it's yeah. something out of Fallout or like BioShock also.
Yeah, BioShock is actually maybe even more accurate.
Yeah, you know what? It actually looks exactly like a BioShock.
Yeah, it's way closer to BioShock.
It might emit a plasmid.
Right. Yep. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
This question was one of the most baffling. The National Infantile Paralysis Foundation is in, and then it lists 6 states. Like the other questions in this, I mean, it's hard to convey how ridiculous this question is without context for what the other questions are like, which are all like this jaunty old pop tune.
Yes.
Has these lyrics, or like this many people are on a baseball team, and then it will like show you an equation on the screen that gives you the number. Like about 98% of the questions on this thing are basically complete giveaways.
Yeah. Well, here's one. Like, a part of the eye is the blank. Pupil is the first response. And then after that, it's student, professor, dean, teacher, and instructor, because they're all synonyms of pupil. Or at least most of them are.
So
yeah,
which one's a part of the eye?
Yeah.
Professor is the correct answer. But there are tons of questions that are all exactly that. It's weird. And who was it? Was it you or Steve who I think it was you who hypothesized that one of the reasons was this isn't a bar, you know, in 1946.
Well, it cost a dime, which I think was probably a decent chunk of change in 1946.
Right. And the idea, and your point was that, you know, some guy slightly drunk, you know, goes in, puts a dime into this machine.
And then,
like, right.
It's like a love test machine, basically.
Exactly.
You have to get at least 3 right before you're going to put another dime in. Yeah, pretty amazing machine.
It was incredible. We played it for so long.
I saw on Twitter, Steve Ganner posted some crazy vector-based
game. That was the other Havoc. One. Yeah, that was the third amazing thing for me.
Major Havoc.
I had never played that. Apparently, some people know about this.
Yeah, I saw the video of it. It looked like this sort of crazily extreme perspective, sort of simulated 3D ship game that would then switch to a flat view, and it had like platforming.
Yeah, it was really impressive. It's the kind of game where you can tell the person who designed it really, really was very dedicated to making sure this game was really good and had a lot of attention paid to it. I mean, it's from an era where, because one of the things about this arcade exhibit was that there were a few games from the late 90s, mainly racing games, but there was almost nothing from the early to mid 90s. It was pretty much all like late 70s, early 80s era arcade, because I guess that's what collectors are more into, because, you know, the early 90s stuff, a lot of it's still in the arcades, or some arcades anyway. So this was all really earlier stuff. And most of the games from that era, like, you know, they've got one gameplay mechanic and you do it forever.
Right.
The cool thing about Major Havoc is clearly whoever made this like really wanted to distinguish his game from the others. I mean, you start out in a ship and it's like a third person behind the ship blasting kind of mode where you're going through space, shooting stuff. And then it just seamlessly transitions right into an on foot 2D side scroller.
Yeah, including like an in game perspective shift.
Right. It's amazing.
There's a landing sequence too.
You have to land it, so that's even another phase.
Yeah. With a pad and then it jumps into the on foot thing, which is sort of a, there's just one button for, it's not really jump. It's sort of float.
Right.
You're in like a low gravity thing. Yeah. It was pretty hard to get. I mean, it was just, the only control was a single button, I think, and then a radial dial.
Or a trackpad, I think.
It wasn't a track. Well, yeah, it was just a horizontal trackpad. It was just a weird.
Yeah. I was talking to Frank Cifaldi, who was another gaming journalist. He used to work for Gamma Sutra as well, and he was telling me that the one with the horizontal trackpad is the original control the game was designed
for.
Yeah,
that's what it seemed.
And then there was
also
a Tempest conversion. Like, you could convert Tempest cabinets to play this game and use the actual dial.
Okay.
So they seemed to both be pretty much the same, though.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And one of the coolest things about it, Jake, as you were saying, it's got it, because it's vector, the ship basically smoothly transitions between all the phases without really ever needing to cut. Like, it cuts sometimes when the ship goes into hyperdrive or whatever, but most of the time, the ship...
Yeah, they just sort of animate all the perspective lines collapsing in on themselves to become a flat view
right.
and stuff.
Yeah. And the ship just grows and shrinks based on that.
You could tell that whoever was making that game, from the video I saw at least, thought they had some hot shit on their hands, because like the loadout screen just had Pong playing itself in the corner.
Yeah, it doesn't play itself. You play it.
Oh, you play
it's
Pong.
It's got
like,
Breakout.
During
it's
the, really? Just
when
during
the game
the load
is loading,
screen
yeah, you play Breakout in the lower right
hand.
Yeah,
that's the most like braggy, hilarious. Like,
I know.
No, I've just got this built into this.
Yeah.
Well, also,
it's not a sequential screen.
I think in the on foot section, there was an almost like a small little picture-in-picture type thing where it was showing you
there's a world map in the top
corner. The whole world map, but it was also animated as well. Like, it was actually like reflecting what was going on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which
someone sassily thought they had amazing hot shit with that game.
It's cool,
unfortunately,
though.
I mean, it was still like the kind of game where you failed after the second level like 99% of the time. Like, it was incredibly difficult. But
yeah, but you know, that's how those games are.
Yeah,
most of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, that's the sort of game that shows up in an arcade and unfortunately no one is going to play, and probably no one would play it now unless it was on TIGSource.
Right Yeah. Exactly.
It was weird to see that as an arcade game.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I mean, it was ridiculously
awesome,
ambitious,
dude,
for a thing to put in an arcade.
Yeah,
it's not at all like high score driven,
right,
or like
someone will put
driven
in a quarter and play my three seamlessly transitioning game modes.
Yeah, exactly.
Telling the saga of this spaceman, Major Havoc.
Right. So that was rad. And then the other thing that I thought was super cool was Tank 8.
Yeah.
This big, huge, flat table that was basically like Atari Combat with twin stick tank controls. So not like joysticks, you know, but the forward and backwards actual tank style controls. And
two big levers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the whole game is just, you're all on a big battlefield and you all just shoot each other. And it's funny because Nick and I sat down to play it early on, and it was pretty boring.
Yeah.
With the two of us playing, it was not that much fun. And then we went back later with the three of us, and then more people started joining in, and eventually we had six or seven people all at this table controlling these tanks, and it turned into just this amazing multiplayer experience.
Yeah.
It was really surprisingly cool. And
I mean, it was just it sort of showed like very early kind of like local multiplayer.
Right.
You know,
yeah. The secret LAN party.
With
Tank 8.
The same
California
dynamic. Yeah. Just, you know, kind of chaotic. And but also I really appreciated the controls, and that was,
yeah,
was something
I
that
agree.
I kept remarking on, but just I don't think that game would work without those really stiff, clunky,
With a lot of resistance
joysticks.
And,
at first they seem
like,
exactly.
It makes you really
you're almost struggling against it
exactly.
more than you are like anything else.
It really exacerbates the frantic nature, especially because your rate of fire is not very high either. So if you miss your shot and then the other guy turns around,
it really simulates what it would be like if eight dudes in actual
tanks
were all for some reason fighting each other.
That was my biggest takeaway.
If this weird situation were to occur, it would feel like this.
Because in a Call of Duty game or whatever, or like Crysis or whatever, you're driving around a tank and it's like, fuck yeah, driving it, like clicking with the mouse and shooting it and strafing in your tank.
Around these huge
It was crazy. I mean, you've got to like stop and kind of line up your shot, especially because it was all, you know, it's all low res pixels, and so the trajectory calculations are really rough. You know, it's got to interpolate like the best path on a fairly low DPI screen, and like so you've got to really line up your shots and take a test shot first and then adjust slightly and then try again. And it really, you know, obviously was not any kind of sim, but it really seemed like it was probably felt a lot closer to actually trying to target any kind of tank than it would be in any more
That's
modern
cool.
video game. It was awesome. And you know, it's funny. I was talking to my boss, Simon, today, and he was telling me that game actually was a prototype and never went to production.
Really?
And this is one of the first times people have ever actually played it. Like,
wow.
So we lucked out.
So apparently it's an awesome experience to have seven players playing Tank 8.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although we were saying, and this is probably true at the time, it would probably be a tough thing to do. I mean, it really, the fun...
It would have to be like in the birthday party room only.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, it really relies on having a pretty full table, or it's just not that good.
Yeah.
And it probably, a lot of arcade owners were probably not ready to... And it's huge, you know, it's an enormous thing.
Right.
It would probably be a difficult thing to justify.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we got to play it. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it was also, you know, it was interesting. One of the things I was thinking about playing that and just all sorts of other games with really specific interfaces, how for some reason in the last couple of years we're all of a sudden doing that again, where every game is its own crazy interface. It's just the difference is now you have to actually buy it and keep it in your home.
Right. So coming soon, the two levers, Tank 8 Home Edition.
Right. But the Wii, you get to hold both of them in the air.
Oh, you just hold two Wii remotes.
Yeah.
It's like a tank.
Yeah.
Isn't with Wii Motion Plus, that could be a reality. That? That has you hold two Wii remotes?
Or Natal, just hold your hands out in front of you. It's just like driving a tank. You thought driving a tank had to be unintuitive. Now with Project Natal, driving a tank is...
With Natal, you actually just have to put two buckets full of rocks in front of you and just put a pipe into each of them that you grind around.
Yeah. It's just as intuitive as driving a real tank.
It's true.
Yeah. So that was cool. I'm really glad we went to that. I didn't really know what to expect, and I was really pleased.
Yeah.
It's kind of expensive, but that's okay. Apparently, they still lose money on it, so I ended up not minding.
I wish I had gone, but I was at the beach.
Yeah. You went on a cool vacation.
Video games. What you were saying about Natal and the idea of like two lead pipes and rocks, maybe
that's
wonder,
what you were saying.
Oh, I was saying that, but what you were saying about Natal and steering a tank and doing the hand motions and stuff, I wonder how that thing perceives scale.
What do you mean?
Like, if you're... I wonder if it knows the difference between you being 20 feet away from it in a really big room versus you just having, like, a small child's robot do a dance on your living room table. Like...
I see what you're saying. Like an action figure or something?
It's 2D eyeball. A person who's, like, you know, I mean, depending on what the lens is, but, you know, a person across a very large living room or, like, playing it in a public space... versus a really close-up tiny thing. I wonder if it knows the difference, and that's
maybe
odd.
It combines it with one of those like golf range meter lasers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It could. I mean, I wonder if it. Yeah. If it is always shooting out beams at you and finding out how far
giving
away you
are.
Giving
you cancer.
Spying on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
It's not really that good of a question.
It's an excellent question, Jake.
Yeah. Stay tuned for the answer.
Yeah, in like 9 months when that thing's released.
Yeah. Is it really only that soon?
I don't know. Isn't it supposed to be early 2010?
I'm not sure they put a date on Natal.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Sony's.
I think I'm thinking of Sony's.
Yeah.
They don't know.
The Game Wand.
I keep forgetting to watch that thing.
Mm.
watching, I'm not really that interested in either of them. So
yeah. Whatever. So have you guys been playing any games made in the last 30 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick and I, well, as of today, have both been playing Age of Discovery. Dawn of Discovery. So I don't think either of us is going to be able to comment very deeply about this game.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. Credibly as well. Yeah. We're completely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're incredible. Yes. No, I started playing it today with the campaign, and Nick, I guess you just did a regular.
Yeah, an endless game. Yeah. Thing. Yeah.
Did you win?
No.
It's endless, Jake. It's, duh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't played. Actually, there are a couple of reasons I started playing this game. One was because Nick was had been talking about Civ 4 recently, and it made me really excited about kind of playing something basically in that genre. But I, one, wanted to play something that I hadn't played before, and two, I had kept seeing screenshots of this game, and they looked so incredibly appealing and gorgeous. I mean, anyone who's seen screenshots of this game knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. It comes with a real-time camera mode that you can just toggle on and off that puts it into a close-up, heavily tilt-shifted kind of depth of field crazy mode that just kind of softens out the edges and things off in the distance and puts a really sharp focus on things in the foreground. And it just makes the game look, it's called postcard mode, and it basically makes it look like it was taken with a, you know, a nice camera with a sort of that weird softening effect. And all the screenshots of the game are presented that way, and they all look like they've been kind of manipulated or faked or something, but that's actually a real-time camera. And I was really curious about a game that would look like that, because this genre is traditionally one that's a lot more kind of Spartan and kind of down to business. And then I also had kind of ignored this game for a while. In fact, I've pretty much ignored all of these games out of Europe. You know, Civilization's obviously an American game, and for whatever reason, I never really got into any of the...
Did you ever play Settlers or anything like that?
No, I actually never did.
Oh, yeah, this is... To anybody who's listening and knows what Settlers is, I mean, Anno is sort of like Settlers, but with more of a trade emphasis.
And yeah, also, Dawn of Discovery, known in Europe as Anno.
Right, yes. Anno 1404, this one specifically.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, European listeners, that's what we're playing. I'm having fun so far. I wish I could have played more before the podcast. I didn't think to start playing it.
We in fact pulled you away from that game to record the podcast.
Yes, I'm fresh from an Anno session, Dawn of Discovering, I don't know how much to say about it. Nick is probably someone who's better equipped to talk about it a little bit, because one, you're more familiar with the genre in general, and two, you probably played more of it than I did.
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Any sort of firsthand, like, general impressions?
Well, it's very deliberately paced. I mean, it's certainly in terms of these sorts
and
of
it's
games.
It's a real time game.
Yeah, it's in real time, but it's there's, you know, I mean, there's a huge emphasis on the economy.
Yeah, and, absolutely. Yeah.
If you've ever played,
I mean, basically,
if you've
you're
ever played
colonizing
Settlers or,
an island, and
yeah, I mean, it's sort of like Settlers, but more of a with that sort of colonization theme, you know.
Right.
I mean, you start out as a ship, and then you sort of plant your base on an island, and your city grows out of that, and you can have multiple islands and stuff like that. I know it's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, part of the appeal is your cities do look awesome. I mean, Jake was kind of like laughing about how, you know, oh, we're just playing games with the graphics. But I think that is sort of like the carrot at the end of the stick in this game. It is sort of like, you know, there's not much of an emphasis on combat. There aren't any like massive battles.
Right, by playing the game, you can make these amazing cities.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's cool because you start off and there's... At least, I don't know how it works in the endless mode, but there's actually a campaign, which I think is a really nice move, because I think one of the things about certainly like Civilization games, one of the things that is frequently difficult for people who are unfamiliar with a given series or even genre is you kind of start this game and it's like, well, here's your settler, go make a civilization. And you're like, oh, Jesus, like what?
Right. At the end of this, you'll be in space.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right. You've got a guy with an axe.
Right,
and it's like, well, start making your spaceship. Just start researching that stuff. You know, start with the wheel. Start with fire. Well, I guess there's no fire in Civilization. But anyway,
I like how you belittle Civilization.
What? I'm not belittling Civilization.
It's amazing, but to someone who is me, an idiot, it's an extremely daunting prospect.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, the real answer to Civilization is just do it and eventually you'll get it. I mean, that is the actual answer, but it's really hard to have any perspective about that. You don't know. Like, when you're doing it for the first time, you don't know that you're supposed to be just kind of stumbling along and eventually you'll figure things out. Like, but what, you know, in this game, they put an actual, and I don't know if this is what past games in this series have done. You know, again, we're not very educated on this series, but you start off with an actual campaign and there's multiple friendly people who have their own islands near you, and you can see what the main narrator guy, you can see what it looks like when he's got this big, awesome city made out of brick and stone and cobblestone streets. Yeah. And he's in the midst of building his cathedral, which is obviously the big center point of a European town and or city. And it really is like, oh man, even though right now all I have is this little crappy village with some, you know, wooden houses and a little marketplace in the center of town and a chapel, like, I will be making that cool thing. And it's cool to see that he's still in the midst of making it. It's not even, you know, it's not like he's done and it's this big thing that's a million years away. It's like he's making it and then there's a certain number of stages to get to that point. And I can't speak very deeply about the mechanics yet, but it's, I don't know. I thought that was a nice choice and it's something that is different than other games in this genre that I've played before.
The one thing I will say that I'm not sure I like very much is that there doesn't seem to be, when you're sort of between, I mean, the way that you could probably speak more to this than I can because I didn't get as far as I think you think I did, but the buildings, you know, when you're sort of moving between, you know, the lowly version of that building, and it's just more of a quick upgrade, right? It's just like, and you have to do that manually, essentially?
You go to the building, then at the top, there's a little upgrade button,
Yeah, I don't know. I think generally I prefer sort of the SimCity 4 thing where your city's kind of slowly evolving on its own a little bit. Like there's a little bit more animation to the cities.
Right.
And one of the other things I noticed about this game is that
you can tell there's some of that because the guy's cathedral is going through multiple
there's phases a little bit of it, but
and things like that. I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah. I think also though, like just one of the things I noticed was that the little workers, I don't know. I would have liked to see more of a distinction between animation, more of a distinction between which, you know, types of workers. In Settlers, they did a pretty decent job in that series of showing, like, this guy is the miner dude and he looks different. And I don't know. There's just more of like a more things to watch as you're kind of just sitting there watching, you know.
Yeah. But, I think that's a fair criticism. I think this game gets around it to some extent by just being so nice to look at.
The world itself is worth watching.
Like zooming in on the ships and watching them cross the ocean is pretty magnificent. Like it's a pretty amazing, for being such a mundane part of the game, it's pretty amazing to watch. And so that's cool. I don't know. We're probably really ill-equipped to talk about this.
Yeah, I know. It's a little really bit early.
But I mean, that's
just one of the things I know is because I've been playing Stronghold Crusader which kind of has the same thing.
Why did you start playing that? Just that for the hell of it?
I don't know. It sounded extreme.
Yeah.
A
lot of extreme this week at California.
I know. Yeah, California extreme, Stronghold Castrator extreme.
Castrator extreme.
That's a crazy game.
Oh, man. Why'd you start playing that?
You know, Stronghold Castrator extreme.
It's a dungeon game. Anyway, you've been playing a game that isn't that.
Yeah.
It was the Crusader extreme.
Right.
Not the expansion pack.
Right.
not the horrible, horrible.
That's horrible. That was never released. We found that along with Tank 8 at California Extreme. It's sort of secret hatch in the floor. You have to descend a spiral stair for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway.
So Stronghold Crusader Extreme.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd covered the game.
I did too, years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, and it always sounded kind of strange, like in a novelty sense. Like, I mean, the premise is just they took Stronghold Crusader and basically multiplied the challenge by maybe 100-fold. Like,
what is Stronghold? Because I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, Stronghold. Stronghold is sort of a blend between that sort of economic management RTS and.
It's about castles, though. Right?
A blend between that and like Rampart or something, where the objective, the first Stronghold place more of an emphasis on defense. And so essentially what you did is you start out with a one building and then your little castle city built, you know, builds out around that. And, you know, there's a balance between managing you know, farmers and stuff, and then building your Cat City walls and defending against these attackers that would come at you in waves, and then you know, just it would get progressively harder.
It's like super hardcore tower defense.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And then this is the extreme version of that.
All right. Yeah, you were describing it as like you start off and there's just like an
Jesus
army outside.
Christ, it is the most, it is literally the most extreme game I've ever played. I was kind of
IGN.com.
Oh, man.
It is. It lives up to the billing. It is fucking ridiculous. I was absolutely blown away. The first level felt like the last level of any other game.
IGN.com?
Perhaps a more vicious
just
version.
Just tossing out IGN left and right.
What's everything you're saying? I know. Bonus code for this game.
It's like the last level of Trine. If that was the first level of trying, that kind of frustration. like
IGN.com.
Yeah. What you're saying now will be transcribed and posted piecemeal by the IGN.com Twitter account. Please continue.
But yeah, the first level was, you know, I mean, a typical Stronghold thing, you know, you start out, there are trees to cut down, there's, you know, space to grow, there are some rocks that you collect, and...
Sweet.
They give you a little leeway. There's some time before guys attack you.
Sure.
Stronghold Crusader Extreme, the first stage, you are on basically, if picture an RTS map, you are wedged into the bottom left corner of that map. You have maybe 5% of the available space to build, and there are, I don't know, like 200 pixels worth of resources. I mean, like, you are wedged into nothing, and then... a couple of yards beyond your base, there's a horde of dudes, and they immediately begin attacking. Like, they give you 30 seconds, and then it's just in fucking onslaught. It is just... there is no time. If you're not clicking, if you're not, like, if put the little, like, StarCraft 2 click meter at the top of the right. screen, if you are not, like, 300 clicks per second, you're gonna fucking die in, like, the first 2 minutes. Guaranteed. You will just be completely obliterated in 2 minutes. It's not an exaggeration. You will be dead in 2 minutes. That is Stronghold Crusader Extreme. Every Jesus. Stage is like that, and then it gets worse. There are 20... I think the trail like campaign thing is there are 20 stages of this.
Yeah, you were saying I was watching you. I was playing fucking King's Bounty, surprise, surprise. And then I saw the little Nick Brecken is playing Stronghold Crusader Extreme. And I'm like, Stronghold Crusader Extreme? What the fuck? I think it's when you first loaded it up.
Yeah.
And then like 3 minutes later, you're like, I'm quitting. Like, this is impossible.
I quit, and I played the regular Stronghold Crusader, which is basically the tutorial for Stronghold Crusader Extreme. Like, that, if you play that for maybe 20 or 30 hours, you might be able to complete the first stage of Extreme. Maybe.
Did you?
Probably not.
Did you ever complete it?
I did. I completed the first stage, and then it took me about 3 or 4 hours to beat the second stage.
Uh-huh.
And
how long was your successful completion? Like, not your attempts, but like... The actual, how long was that stage when you
completed? Oh my god,
it
takes forever.
Really?
I mean, basically, you know, the original Stronghold, what I liked about it was, it was, I could be fuzzy on this, but I think the entire game was simply defensive. You know, and the criticism has always been that it's almost like a puzzle, you know.
And presumably Stronghold Crusader has...
I think so. I think that's where it made the leap to an offensive thing. Yeah. And I'm not a big fan of that because the fun of that series is not... You know, attacking.
So you'd prefer a Stronghold Extreme.
Yeah, I would actually.
Well, I mean, it doesn't sound like there's any room to go be a Crusader and Crusader Extreme.
Essentially, what you do is you hold out, and as you're holding out, there are these sort of like barbarian camps that are spawning thousands of guys at a faster rate as you go along. And if you manage to get to the point where you sort of built up enough guys to where you can push back just a little bit, you do that for about 2 hours. And then once you've cleared maybe half the screen, then you can start thinking about maybe launching your own attack. And then after another 2 hours, maybe you've, you know, got to the point where
you can.
It is ridiculous. I don't know why I played it.
For apparently a million hours now.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's so much of a challenge that it's kind of, I guess it's maybe the equivalent of like Ikaruga for a shmup fan. You know what I mean? Like, I've never, I'm terrible at those games, so I never can bother with that. But the
strategy equivalent has been found.
Right. Yeah. It's that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I'm glad you found something you like to do.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But no, it has the same, it is similar to Anno, and it's got that sort of economic thing where you have to grow wheat, and then the mill grinds it into flour, and then you've got you make bread out of that.
Except you're being besieged by 3,000 yes. dudes.
Yeah, right. Which is actually, I mean, I really like that. I like Stronghold a lot.
Wheat supply. You got them.
Yeah, you got your little workers just like, hanging out.
Well, and then I'm half the time wood. Your workers are getting hit by like trebuchets from like 3,000 yards away.
People demand a rope factory. Damn it.
I was playing when Jake came over. I was playing Dawn of Discovery, and man, those guys really fucking wanted a rope factory.
Like,
that's for
everyone.
Sure.
Like five advisors came up all with their own version of why they need a rope factory within like 10 seconds.
Man, by the way, one of the things, Nick, Stronghold is by Firefly, right?
Yes.
And they have offices in both the UK and the United States, right?
I think so.
Do you
yeah.
know which is the main one? Like, are they mainly a British?
I think they're mainly UK, yeah.
This is telequiz.
Because the reason I bring it up is because we were commenting on Dawn of Discovery that one of the interesting things was that. Religion is very visible.
Mm-hmm.
It's
one of
it's,
the yeah, one of the central buildings is your cathedral.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean the first thing the second thing I guess I built in Dawn of Discovery was a chapel.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and
should
the
should
have whole, been the first. Right, I know. And the whole time I'm playing, my like buddy guy over on his own island just like can't stop talking about his awesome cathedral that he's making and how sweet that's gonna be. And like and then it's funny because when you build the chapel, the first thing that I don't know if this is what he always says, but in mine when I built it, he's like, the chapel, soon we'll be enjoying our first mass. And it was like a really crazy thing to hear in a video game.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard for me to imagine an American video game developer putting that in a game, which is kind of funny because the United States, as far as I'm aware, is actually more heavily religious than Europe mm-hmm. at this point. Like,
maybe we're also more afraid of even admitting that things existed in the past.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, if you live in Europe, it's hard to, like,
oh, yeah,
in
hard
some
to
parts
deny
of Europe,
that
it's
like there are three cathedrals in every block.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in some cities, it's just like, obviously the church had a pretty firm stronghold in this town for a while because they own all of it.
And it was relatively recently, historically speaking, in England that, you know, to be a city, you needed a cathedral. I mean, that was only recently not the case.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Like, it's a really, I find it really fascinating. And you were saying Stronghold has
the same way. Yeah. I mean, there aren't that many buildings in Stronghold at the end of the day, and several of them are cathedrals.
Right.
Like, there's a cathedral progression. There are like four or five different.
Did you guys ever play Castles? It was an Interplay game from the early 90s.
No, I know of it, but I never played it.
Yeah.
God, that game was fun. And then Castles 2 was really good. It's one of those games where, it's probably true for pretty much, well, at least for people who grew up playing games on the PC when there was no like Nintendo Power equivalent, and you know, you didn't know necessarily, at least I didn't and my friends didn't, we didn't know necessarily what was like the big thing on PC everyone was playing, probably until like Doom. That was probably the first example of something we knew everyone was playing, and then Myst after that was like mm-hmm. the next one. Until that point, we pretty much just found stuff that we thought looked cool.
Right.
And I remember buying this game Castles one time. I don't think I have the box anymore, but I had it for years. And you're it's kind of like these games, really. I mean, it's you're building a castle, and the game is sort of split between like this really intricate castle building thing where you build your own castle, and then like a top down regional map where you go and conquer different areas. And I remember in that game, the Pope was the most fucking badass motherfucker ever. That guy had the craziest fucking army. Like, if you pissed off the Pope, you were screwed.
Yeah.
Like, that guy would just ride around and fuck you. And, like, he could excommunicate. Like, if you pissed him off, he could excommunicate you. And that was, like...
Educational learn as a child.
Yeah. But it was, it was, like, I was raised Catholic. And I'm like, oh, man, the Pope. Yeah. That guy, like, he's the guy in charge.
What does he excommunicate you? Then just you're not allies with anyone anymore or something? I mean, what is it?
I think so. And then he just tramples you. I mean, he just sends out his knights and they just...
Medieval Total War is great for that as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It has Battle Pope?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, they're the Papal States, and if you break from them, you're pretty much screwed.
Mm.
But then there are all these little, like, religious kind of, one country might find, like, a piece of the cross, which is something that, you know, that they just made up.
Right,
you know,
they just invented.
Yeah. Oh, we've got a piece of the cross in here.
It's like all of the saints' bones and relics.
Yeah, exactly, Hilarious stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to find it
I would love to find a piece of the cross.
Yeah. God, that'd be sweet. Oh, I would love to check out castles again and see. I mean, I'm sure it's incredibly antiquated at this point, but I would be really curious to see how it plays.
A lot of great
now.
Games like that, like Lords of the Realm, was what I played. That was a great. The one thing I remember about that game was that when you captured an enemy village, you could it always brought up an option box that said "slaughter all villagers?" question mark, and I could almost never. Keep myself from doing that.
Oh, really? So, I was always the guy who always
no,
I'm not gonna kill them. Yeah,
I'll be a good leader, and they'll all love me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we should take a break.
All right.
Huh? What do you think about that?
Sure.
Oh shit! There's one more thing I wanted to mention about
break postponed,
which I thought was funny. Was the loading screen has that classic Maxis thing where it makes up like goofy shit,
but it's not
like,
nearly as
unraveling
funny as
tornado.
It's like the European version.
Yeah, it's like
inviting computer players to play a game. It's
calculating the weather.
Filling up the ocean with water. It's like
filling the ocean with salt or whatever.
Yeah,
it was what it was.
It was really funny. I mean, it was kind of amusing, but it's also like. It's kind of slightly off of like the sort of Maxis like perfect blend of pseudo babble science and like I don't know, it was
it's the second language approach
I mean you know the actual localization's fine, it's completely it was obviously written by like real dudes, but like the
there might be some wacky English language European YouTube humor going on.
And it's funny playing this game because it's just so European, which I don't say negatively, but it's like it's just, you can tell, you know what I mean? It's like, I kind of like, because video games are so frequently not that, you know? I mean, it's like...
Well, you've been on a European PC game kick lately. It seems like.
Okay. Probably.
Deny
no,
all
no, maybe,
like.
No, no. What else? I'm just
trying to think. This, I feel like there's this King's Bounty and a third one.
Oh, King's Bounty, of course. I've been playing that fucking forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably have. Oh, Cryostasis, for example. Yeah.
Yep.
Penumbra. Yeah, so you're right. For some reason, I've been playing a lot of European PC games. I don't know. Weird. It was not intentional, but I'm happy with it. I don't know. I've been playing a lot of good games. It's been cool. But yeah, this game is like hilariously European, not just in terms of European game design, but it's just like, wow, this is born out of the European historical tradition, which is just, it's interesting. Like I, you know,
castles and cathedrals.
Right. Yeah. It's just kind of cool. I, for some reason, cause Civilization is not like that. You know, Civilization's designed to be more of a one size fits all kind of thing, which makes sense. I mean, we were talking about it last week and it works much better that way for allowing you to theoretically pursue like a lot of different theoretical alternate histories. Whereas, you know, a lot of these European games are so much more specifically focused on kind of the history of colonial Europe or medieval Europe or what have you. And it's an interesting perspective because you couldn't, you know, it's very difficult for, I guess in America we have like the Oregon Trail, you know what I mean? That's like kind of, I mean, that's sort of the equivalent, but it doesn't go back very far. You know, it goes back a couple hundred years. There isn't sort of millennia of that to explore, and I traditionally have not played a lot of these European games, honestly. I was more into the Civilization kind of thing, so it's been interesting kind of coming in contact with it. Video games,
anyway. Wacky load screen, we're gonna take a break now.
Video games.
Trying to think, well, I mean, you know, played a little Legend of Zelda, a little Mega Man 9.
What, really?
Yeah.
What Legend of Zelda?
One.
Nice. Talk about
that.
I'm not going to talk about that.
Why not? Why?
Finally got to the fifth dungeon.
Really?
Yeah.
Just bring it up.
I've got nothing to talk about.
I don't know.
It's really not worth talking about.
Have we ever talked about that game on this podcast before?
No. I mean, do you guys all have Legend of Zelda things to say? And I only played about 10 minutes
or
maybe 20.
I could say something about it if I've never said anything about it before, because I only played that game a couple of years ago.
All right. Also, I finally beat...
I
beat four more Robot Masters in Mega Man 9.
Oh man, we'll fucking talk.
Which
about
I haven't talked about since I think the first episode of Idle Thumbs, possibly.
Yeah.
Second.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fine. We can put those on the game list and make people think we're not just a bunch of weird European PC assholes.
Also, we play retro throwbacks and the original Zelda.
Yeah. Right.
People will know those are the two games I was playing as well, because it's like, what the hell? Some sort of a downloadable bullshit Wii game or like a DS thing? Ugh, probably Jake. He doesn't play anything real.
DS? Was that where you played?
No, but I mean, those are the only things I ever talk about. Where it's like, no, I was playing this indie iPhone game. I was playing this art style game I got from DSi Store, making a sound
basically
effect.
Basically, we're all just snobby assholes.
Right, and you're just like, no,
ways.
I've been sampling the latest if out of Eastern Europe. And then you're like, I only want to be raped in half by my game. That's all we ever play, apparently. We're just three douchebags. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's the new name of the podcast.
Video game.
playing it. So I guess we're back.
The Three Dudes. Yeah. Reminds me of that Three Stooges arcade game.
Oh, yeah. We played a shitty damn. Three Stooges. That was the worst game. I still have no idea what we were attempting to do in that game.
I was just attempting to slap you as much as I possibly could and then hold you in place, basically.
What was the game called? Like, Wives is...
What?
Well, the game actually had a name. Really? No, it was Three Stooges, and then it was like Wives is something, or like, I don't know. It was weird. Yeah, we all just walked around slapping each other, and I couldn't figure out how to do anything. No. You could pick up items. And
it was one of those weird like spy versus spy games where it was just a board with just a lot of random objects and like cops like hitting you with batons, and then there was a cat or something, or like dog, and
it was like, what was that game on the N64 with like slappers? Was that like GoldenEye or was it Perfect Dark?
Slappers.
Or something. Am I thinking of a totally different game?
Slappers. You know,
what
slappers.
Like, I don't know. I'm thinking of, what the fuck? I don't know, some multiplayer game. Anyway.
You know, that's, you know, Slappers EX.
Slappers.
Slappers.
Slappers 3D.
Slappers 64, only on N. It was good.
Yeah, that was a good game.
So, yeah, Rareware.
So, yeah. What were we going to talk about for real?
I don't know.
You played Battlefield 1943.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which do you play on 360, PS3?
360.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't planning to play it. I was going to wait for the PC version.
But you just couldn't help yourself. You had to get it now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was not extreme enough to wait.
I was kind of curious. It was something that I was sort of strangely avoiding at press events and things. I was not interested in it at all.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like I've played enough Battlefield in my life.
Yeah, you were a big Battlefield guy.
Yeah, yeah. Up until Battlefield 2. I mean, I played a decent amount of that, but I tried the demo and then I was like, this is a game that I could probably play for 10 hours, so I'll buy the full game and see what it's like. Because it got a lot of positive press and it was looking pretty positive. Yeah, it's $15.
Uh-huh. That's right, it's downloadable.
Yep. I was actually pretty impressed with it.
Cool.
How many players? As a big fan of 1942, it was how many players? I think the max is 24. I've mm-hmm. seen. Yeah, yeah, it's 24. Which isn't bad. That's kind of like the minimum to me of what a Battlefield game should feel like. Right. Anything lower than that felt a little weird and a little empty. But no, it actually worked pretty well. I mean, they have streamlined it quite a bit. There are only three classes. And there is some health regeneration stuff going on. A lot of stuff that fans weren't too wild about, on paper.
Right.
But it actually works really, really well. All the weapons feel pretty solid and it's kind of approachable in a way that a Battlefield game hasn't been to this point, or at least approachable in a way that it still feels satisfying. You know, I mean, they kept enough depth and enough of the elements of 42 it kind of is. And but the three classes that they chose, I mean, Battlefield 1942 was always a game that, you know, some of the classes didn't feel 100% necessary, and you know, there was some cutting to be done there. So it really impressed me. The one thing I'm not very sure about is whether to recommend it for PC or 360. I don't. The flying is actually really, really nice on the console. You control it with, you know, the two sticks. One is yaw, and then
pitch and yaw.
Yeah, and it works really well. It's actually really satisfying, and but on a PC you'd probably end up just using your mouse, which
you don't.
I did
switching back and forth.
Yeah, I don't think
because you could probably have them both plugged in.
You could. But I probably wouldn't.
Right.
I always use the mouse to fly in 42.
Yeah. I had a whole lifetime of using the mouse only to ever fly. Like,
I know.
TIE Fighter.
God damn it. I was going to say X-Wing. Yeah.
Beat you to it, asshole. Yeah. I mean, I did it with X-Wing as well.
What? Hey, guys. Anyway.
I'm just saying. I totally beat him to the punch on that historical nostalgic note.
Yeah.
No, I it's funny because I did it so, like, you know, I never really had a joystick that I... You know, that stuff was just how I played a flight game.
Yeah. PC gaming. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, whatever. I you know what's funny, actually? That's a lie. I did have a joystick. It came with my CD-ROM drive.
Sweet, a whole gaming package.
No, it was, because in those days, like, it came with a sound card and a CD-ROM drive and games and all this shit.
Yeah,
like,
multimedia kit.
You probably don't have it. It was when CD-ROM drives were brand new. This was like when you could first buy.
You really want to appreciate a CD-ROM drive? Here's the rest of your computer.
Yeah, it really was, because I didn't have any of that stuff. So it was, they figured out their market, and Yeah, and I just never used it. I was already I'd already been playing X-Wing that, and in fact, I had both of those games on diskette on like 13 fucking discs. And I was so accustomed to playing them with the mouse that I never ever switched to flight sticks. And to this day, I've used a joystick like twice in my life.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I never used a joystick for those games where it was somewhat optional.
Right. Know? Right. If they didn't require it.
Yeah.
And if it did require it, I just didn't play it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Weird.
Anyway.
So it was 1943.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's actually worth checking out if you're a Battlefield fan.
Cool. Do you know if they're going to increase the player count on PC?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Well, maybe. I mean,
I can't quite remember changing something.
I'm fairly certain they said, you know, initially that they were going to. I don't know if anything's changed since then.
Yeah.
But I have to assume they are. Yeah. So,
what are the three classes?
How many weapons? How many maps?
I was actually just curious because you can't be like, in the three classes, they streamlined it.
How many hours?
Anyway, the three classes, compared to Battlefield. So anyway, they've got these three classes. But anyway, TIE Fighter.
Nick, you just got pooped on.
I know, I did. You brought it up like 1,000 times. Also, this is my telequiz question. What are the three classes?
He's still not going to answer you.
Yeah.
Which of these classes is an industrial nation?
It's a sniper, anti-tank dude, and just a regular rifle guy. But what they did that was interesting, though, is, you know, with a stupid standard soldier guy, typically it was just, I don't know, I always think of those classes as just, okay, there's your sort of baseline default dude.
Video game guy.
A video game guy with a gun. Right. And then you know, they had the guy with the machine gun.
But this one has like a rocket jump guy, and like, he shouts funny things. I don't know.
Yeah, it's Tribes.
He's got a taunt.
Anyway, go ahead.
This is Shazbot.
Oh, man, Shazbot.
Yeah.
Mork and Mindy?
Mork and Mindy. It's a Tribes thing.
It's a Tribes thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Or Mork and Mindy. I watched that show as a kid.
But no, what they did with the rifle guys, they made him into sort of like a long range thing. So when you're actually sort of aiming down the sight and you have a lot of range. And so he's a very specialized kind of long range class.
Really?
And then the anti-tank guy is very specifically a short range anti-tank or you know, machine gun guy. And then the sniper is obviously like extreme distance, or he also has like a sword. If you're like this Japanese guy, you know, like a decent melee weapon.
Is this fairly long, mid to long range game then? It's if you have two classes focused on relatively long range, and then also you've got vehicles and planes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, you don't really end up getting killed from extreme range that often. Okay. I think possibly because it's
you
more
just try
to aim on the.
I
had a lot of frustration with this game initially. I was like, ah, damn it! I just want a mouse.
Right.
But
you got used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it a little bit, and like I said, some things such as the flying are actually pretty well suited to the console.
Sure,
so.
Sure, yeah. That makes
sense.
But
yeah, I think on PC, I think a lot of the game in this form is just flag trading and no cooperation. And, you know, I suppose if you have 24 friends together, it's a really satisfying game of Battlefield. But I think on the PC, you'll probably end up with more organized matches that don't feel like a, you know, feel like you're just sort of like a dude. You know, they throw you into those pseudo
squads. Why do you say
squads.
That?
They throw you into
you
like
think a, there's like an existing Battlefield community that's going to make that happen? Or
I just feel like on the PC, it's almost generally easier to communicate. You know, you end up voice chat is just a holocaust most of the time on the console. So I mean, without typing, I almost feel like it's harder to get across your point. And also, I feel like the PC community, you know, not to generalize too much, but I feel like, you know, a lot of those guys probably
that heritage is there. I mean,
a lot of those guys probably were 1942 fans. A lot of them are probably you know, more likely to you know, form a coherent strategy or at least know what's going on.
I do have to say, I know what you're talking about, the text chat. I was a huge fan of voice chat for like when Xbox Live came out.
Yeah.
Originally, like, and I, well, not when it came out, but when I started playing, it was mainly with Halo 2.
Yeah.
And I loved having voice chat. And I just over the years, I've gotten more and more irritated by it to the point where I can hardly even stand to play on Xbox Live anymore. Yep. And I,
my curmudgeon-y preference is vindicated.
are you making fun of me? No, I
never really have been into voice chat.
I like it when I'm playing with my own friends.
When you're playing on a public server, voice chat actually just completely shatters the illusion that you're playing with anyone who is remotely invested in the game or being a human being.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas in text chat, you can just pretend that they're playing along or whatever.
And it's funny too, because on the PC, like on Steam games, which all have integrated voice chat, I still don't really use it unless I'm playing with my friends. And then people get pissed.
Right.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
The hell?
Come on.
You don't have to get a mic. Buy a mic, asshole.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't fucking care. Fuck you. Whatever. I'll type my shit if I need to.
Well, a lot of the times it ends up being thing for me where I'll if I'm playing with friends, even, you know, you sort of just bullshit on the mic, and then you, I'll just keep, like, if I want to, like, you know, say go to this thing, I'll just type that, you know. It's almost like a separate,
the microphone is the social layer for you, and then the game is in text,
because it almost ends up being that anyway,
right, where you type the serious stuff and then you fuck it up, and then you all laugh about it on the microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the best communication is probably Diablo 2 with the numpad, like, barks.
Right.
This is yours. This is for you. Die. Time to die. Die. Time to die. Thanks. Whoops. This is for you. Yeah. My friends and I would sit there in the middle of the goddamn town and do that for like 20 minutes. And then other people would come into our game and be like, come on, let's go. Let's go do cows. Come on. Let's go. Cows. Let's go. Cows. Cows. And we're just sitting there. Hello. Hello. Whoops. This is for you. Die. Time to die. Yeah. It's so fucking fun. It never gets old. I can't wait for Diablo 3. Man, I hope they put that back in there. That's my opinion. Do it, Blizzard. I got no, I'm
all
I'm
that's saying. The new, like, I don't have any point petition. To
make. Yeah.
Fuck this game.
Color palette, whatever. Take it or leave it. Numpad, macros, get that shit in there.
Time to die. Die. Yeah. Speaking of Blizzard.
We're not supposed to say that.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they specifically said not to. Yeah.
La, 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 la.
Yeah.
I'll write that down for you.
Yeah. Anyway, so
this is great.
Moving on. Yeah. So that's Battlefield 1943. Cool.
Yeah.
I've been playing more King's Bounty. I have to say, I still very highly recommend this game. Extremely, but I maybe also recommend stopping when you start to feel like you should stop and not feeling like you should keep playing it to get to the end.
Is there no end?
There's an end, but it feels like there isn't. This game, one, is fucking long, and two, it gets so hardcore. And a really interesting thing about King's Bounty that I really like about it is that there's no I talked about this last week. There's no respawning. Basically, everything's a limited resource. It's nice because it means the game doesn't really expect you to grind in the traditional way.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, because it's kind of impossible. It's like once you kill an enemy, he's gone forever. But the problem is, if you get to a certain point in the game and you haven't leveled to the point you need to be, or you haven't, you know, gotten the right shit you need, it's just fucking hard, because there aren't any more easy guys for you to beat up on to get more experience. You just have to be fucking badass at it.
So what you're saying is, sort of long form, you actually suck at King's Bounty.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's it kind of just turns into a different game, though. Like, you kind of just have to become really, really hardcore at it. You know what I mean? It's like, early on, you can kind of pick and choose who you fight to the, like, enough, because there are enough guys there to fight. And also, it's just not that hard at the beginning. That, you know, it just, you can do it. You can get back, buy and level your guys, and it's fun and kind of straightforward. And also, it's really easy to fight early on and be really particular about it and never lose any guys in your combat. You know, it's not that hard to if you really are dedicating yourself to that style, to kill all your enemies without losing a single one of your own troops, or come close to it anyway, only lose a couple. And late in the game, you either have to be amazing, or you just have to accept that you might actually lose like hundreds of guys in a boss battle. I mean, it was kind of, I had to really psychologically get myself to that point, because it's so counter to all of my video game instincts. Like, I get sad when I lose a Pikmin, you know? So it's like, in this game, when I've got 300 of my cool bears dying, it's very depressing sometimes. But it was like a real breakthrough when I realized, like, you just kind of have to do that. And I kind of just accepted it and was like, well, I guess I'm just gonna have to replenish my whole fucking army after a major fight. I still, at this point, I'm mainly playing this game out of, like, a grudge now. I like, the game, I feel like, is so...
It's King's Bounty Extreme.
Yeah, it's King's Bounty. Like, I feel like this game will have beat me if I, like, personally beat me if I stop playing at this point. Because I was enjoying it.
It'll do the Ganon laugh at you. The
right, exactly, like, yeah. Right. Return of Ganon.
Yeah.
It's like... early on in the game, I'm like, man, this game is so fun. I should actually play to the end of this game. I'm actually going to beat this game because it's really fun. It'll be easy because I enjoy it so much. And now I'm just like, Jesus Christ, you fucker. Leave me alone. Like, this is ridiculous. It's so long and it just gets so crazy.
You're going to get an email about this.
Yeah, I know.
Whatever. You're a whiny bitch.
I know. Well, whatever. One of the rock, paper, shotgun guys, I think Alec Mir, after I was... looking this up, someone sent me a link to it. I guess he wrote a post about it a few months ago, and he basically has the exact same opinion about it than I do. So I'm in good company, I guess. Other people also find this game a little ridiculous towards the end. And, you know, there's a little bit of that Trine syndrome where it's, for a game I enjoyed so unreservedly for hours and hours, it is a little frustrating to suddenly have this kind of pallor cast over it where it's just not as joyful. I don't know. But I still highly recommend it. There's like a good, Jesus, like a good fucking 60 hours of just amazing times I had. So
yeah,
see if I can actually beat it. I'm getting pretty close. I can tell. The main quest line is actually starting to wrap up. So we'll see if I can do it. It's been inhibiting my time playing anything other than King's Bounty, unfortunately.
You have that problem sometimes where you no longer actually like this game, but
I don't do it that often, actually.
Sometimes you do, though. Yeah. Sometimes you just destroy your life, sort of.
Can you think of other examples? You're probably right.
I can't. Luminous, possibly. Where you oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to be playing this anymore, but it's not over. I'm just keeping it minimized all the time.
Yeah. Luminous is weird. A little different because it's a puzzle game, but it's funny because traditionally I'm not this way. Traditionally, I just never get to the end of games. I mean, that's the reason I was trying to, earlier on, set a goal to finish this game is because usually I just don't. I mean, I feel like it's kind of ridiculous to enjoy video games and write about them for a living and all, you know, follow the industry so closely and like never get to the end of games. It just seems silly, but it's true for a lot of people. And so specifically this year, I've been keeping a list of games I've completed, which I've never done before, really. And so I've been actually trying to get to the end, and it keeps foiling me. Like, games, most of them, maybe not most of them, a lot of them get really bad towards the end. Not just because they get hard. Sometimes they just get unfun or boring.
Yeah, you can sort of feel the, you know, just like people getting to the end of maybe making the game.
Right.
And, we all played the first 5 hours of this game a lot.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, that's what's, you know...
No one really got to that
list. I think that's what's true about King's Bounty. I mean, I think probably internally, all the playtesters who played this game enough, by the time they got to the end, they played this game for probably hundreds of hours as playtesters. And, like, they were probably so ridiculously hardcore that for them... The latter stage of this game.
There was probably a ramp up that made it look more correct.
Right. Yeah. But for someone who's only playing through it for the first time ever and you're learning stuff just as you go, you don't know to prepare for that. You know, why would you? And I think that's probably a not uncommon problem in games that require a lot of balance. Anyway, that's all I need to say about King's Bounty. I've talked about it a lot lately, so that's enough. You guys want to do some reader mail?
Yeah.
Sweet. Let's see what we have here. We got a lot of hostile reader mail this week.
Yeah. So this is the reader hate mail coming out this week.
Yeah. Kevin Waters writes, "Dear Chris, I listened to you bitch and moan for 5 minutes about how Trine's final level was an abomination upon the difficulty curve of an otherwise great game. So I was prepared for the worst when I played through it last weekend. But I beat it on the first try. I don't mean to be mean or imply that you suck or anything, but since you write about and play video games for a living, you should grow some balls. Gain some chops by playing the lost levels over and over or something. Look, I get it. Trine is old school. I'm not saying you need to become some kind of side-scroller savant or anything, but Jesus, did you overstate your case there. Enough so that I'm going to be applying the by now well-established Remo skill handicap, see also Henry Hathworth, to all of your future whining. A nonetheless loyal listener, Kevin." All right. Sometimes we get criticisms that I think are fair enough, and there is one later in this. We dig another email that I think is a fair criticism. Kevin, no, you're full of shit. Like, this is... Okay, one...
Oh, God.
The number of people who constantly are talking about how video game journalists and video game developers should be so great at playing games, I don't know what to tell you. There's no entry test, one. I don't review games for a living. There's no reason I would ever...
You're saying Gamasutra is not staffed by all the best video game experts?
Yeah, it's true. I'm completely out of place at Gamasutra.
We hire from pro gamers.
We got ranked player Chris Raymond.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have to be able to write about games, which is a separate skill to being
probably
a
play
god at
more
them.
Games and are better at many games than many journalists, especially a game on a PC.
Yeah, well,
I mean, not you're no Wendell, but
Wendell. Oh,
yeah,
yeah, right.
I mean, I would say as a friend, you're reasonably competent at PC gaming.
Yeah.
Passably competent.
Right. And some other kinds of game, puzzle games and stuff, for example. But yeah,
puzzle games, I'm a pro. But anyway, sorry.
Blocks. But yeah, no, I'm not a fucking god at every genre. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Also, Trine is not old school. In fact, one of the things I found so great about Trine is how incredibly progressive it was. There was nothing particularly old school about the challenge level of that game at all until the end. It doesn't even, it's one thing to say you didn't have trouble with Trine. It's another thing to compare every level of the game and then that level. There's, I mean, regardless of whether any one particular person has a high enough skill level to be able to pass all those levels easily, there's unquestionably a completely different design approach taken in all the levels up to the last level and then the last level itself. Maybe that's fine with you, and that's okay. That's a separate point. But I have some pretty severe criticisms about the actual design attitude taken to the last level that's even aside from the difficulty. That said, I did find it harder. And if you go to any forum talking about Trine, go to the Steam forums, go to GAF, you know, there are a lot of complaints about this to the point that the developers said they're going to adjust the difficulty in that last level. So I don't know. I feel
so play Trine while you can.
Yeah, right.
Video game pros of America. Yep.
Yeah. And then as far as Henry Hatsworth, I beat that game in the New Game Plus extreme hard mode. So I still think it was way too hard. I mean, just because I'm capable of beating something doesn't mean I think it's well-designed. I think even though I beat Henry Hatsworth in the extra unlockable deluxe hard mode, I still think that game was too hard. It was a really ridiculous, inconsistent difficulty curve that made the game less fun. I mean, that's different than saying I was able to beat it. So anyway, that's my point about that. Sorry, Kevin, for that response, but I very much disagreed with your email. Let's see here.
Let's hear a complaint you do disagree or agree with, rather.
Oh, I've got to find that one, yeah. It was a different... Okay, here we go. Alan the Underground writes, I love the podcast, but does Chris Remo ever shut up? I like what he has to say, but he needs some sort of blinking light to tell him when he's completely beaten a topic into the ground. Plus, he needs to stay the hell out of other people's segments. This isn't the Chris show, wait your turn. Other than that, I like the podcast. Keep up the work, Alan. Yeah, I think it's fair enough. I think I do probably talk too much
sometimes.
I'd
agree with that.
Yeah.
You're not going to back me up on this?
I'm just representing my 10% of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to talk during this segment. Chris hits me if I do.
I don't care.
Where do we read that email? We usually don't read those.
We do. You don't get those. I read as much of the emails we have the time to read usually. Jens Bengtsson writes, just wanting to inform you that the countdown to tears is over. I just bought Ikaruga on Xbox Live Arcade, since it was the deal of the week for 400 points. I was able to finish the first level after 3 or 4 tries, then I couldn't get more any further. This is where the tears occurred. What are some games that you have encountered where the difficulty pushed to the verge of tears? Love the podcast and Wizards. Jens, Stockholm, Sweden.
Well, immediately disregard Chris's opinion on this.
yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Stronghold Crusader Extreme
is pretty much the...
Yeah, we talked about one earlier this episode,
yeah,
in fact.
Yeah. 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 God, what else?
You went through like 3 keyboards due to shorting out from tears.
I mean, there are a lot of games if you ramp the difficulty up, but I'm trying to think of something that's at the default level that is as difficult as Ikaruga.
Fucking the new Contra game?
Oh, DS? Right. Yeah.
That game was hard as shit.
Isn't Mega Man, the new Mega Man, isn't... Actually, Jake, aren't you playing
Mega Man 9?
Oh, yeah, Jake, you played some of that recently.
Yeah, I finally started playing Mega Man 9 again after only beating one guy when it first came out because I suck. That game is hard, but they... I can't... Mega Man 9 isn't fair. That game's supposed to be hard because it's supposed to be a callback. And that game has like a store system where you can buy a billion energy tanks and continues and extra lives to make it not that.
Okay.
Hey, but you beat some bosses.
I did beat some bosses. I've been trying to play Mega Man 9 as I would play Mega Man 1 through 3, which is not owning Nintendo Power or the internet and having no idea what the actual... correct chain of how to beat bosses so you can kill them in 3 hits. So the number of robot masters that I've killed with the Mega Buster is really depressing. I've been brute forcing Mega Man and hoping that sort of like maybe one of the levels where I can make it to the guys, also one of the ones where I have the power that will work correctly, and I'm apparently just playing it backwards or something.
Oh, man. Well, you're making the game potentially get easier for yourself over time.
Yeah, the sort of probability that you have the weapon to defeat the boss is going to sort of eventually just collapse to obviously you do, but...
Did you do Galaxy Man first? Isn't he the first one that you're supposed to do?
Yeah, I did him first. It was like, because he's easy. You can just find him and then kill him.
He's the only one I did.
But then I don't know where I'm supposed to go next, and I've taken out 4 other people, and just through through mega busting the shit out of them.
Right.
That game created tears, but they were
nostalgic.
They were sort of tears that were asked for.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're demanding those tears.
Yeah. I could just
give me the tears.
I could just go on GameFAQs and load up 1,000
you're
ways.
You're in the dungeon.
Yeah. What?
What? I don't know. We referenced some kind of dungeon earlier.
Oh yeah. Oh no, that was the castration dungeon. Oh, that right. That's not the dungeon that I'm in. Yeah. That's not. That would definitely.
That's tears.
Yeah. What are we talking about?
Yeah. I don't know. Reader mail, I guess.
Hard games.
Okay. So that was that.
totally answered.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Ryan Arnold writes, working as a database manager, you tend to generate a lot of reports. I was working in Excel, and as my mouse was hovering over the chart wizard button, I breathed chart wizard in an intense sotto voce, imagining an intense echo chamber vocal effect, giving it just the right amount of gravitas. Thought I'd share, Ryan Arnold, THQ Database Administrator. Sweet. Yeah. We've actually gotten, I don't think we ever read any of these emails, but we've gotten a lot of emails from people talking about how, like, the wizard.
Yeah.
Just when they see that
they encounter
word.
A wizard in mm-hmm. an office thing or just
like software.
Like a lot of people apparently playing Trine were influenced by us talking about the wizard.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Which I am glad about that.
Hopefully more people play Trine and are influenced by the wizard, but mostly right. mostly just more people should play Trine.
Yeah. Julio Cho writes, hello there. I started listening to your podcast right after Chris's appearance in the Gamer with Jobs conference call, and I've started playing King's Bounty by your recommendation while listening to the back catalog of episodes. This is the first game in a long while, maybe since Civilization IV, that I'm constantly thinking about during work, about going home and playing until I can't feel my limbs anymore. Here's a story that illustrates how much I love this game. There's a mechanic in which you can get married to an NPC, and you get extra inventory slots and bonuses. I was married to a frog, yes, a frog, and then decided to marry a hot elven princess. However, 2 hours later, I noticed the frog bitch took the equipment that was on her. It was mainly one of a mostly one-of-a-kind stuff that I needed to finish the game and didn't save in the meantime. If this happened in another game, I probably would have stopped playing just from the thought of, fuck, I have to do it all over again. But I just decided to bite the bullet, reload, and go through the grind once more. Then in the splash screen, there was a tip that read something like, when leaving you, your wife takes the children, any items she's wearing, and 1/5 of the gold. The damn game read my mind and told me to read the fucking splash screen tips first. Keep up the good job, Julio. Yeah, that's actually true about King's Bounty. You get a surprising amount of useful information from the loading screens, except this game loads so preposterously fast that I never have time to read them. I have to do that thing where I sort of like read the first, they're randomly generated, you know? So I read like a little bit of it and then the same one will pop up like 8 screens later. And then my brain kind of subconsciously pieces these flashes. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
These flashes together. And I wish there was a way to set those as an option to not go away till you click through them, but yeah, that does happen in this game. Also, did I mention last week the hilarious message you get when you have a kid? And it's
no,
like
I don't think so.
It's like you've experienced the miracle of childbirth. Your new child takes the place in your wife's heart and inventory slot, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
This game is really funny in that respect. Andrew Yinkst writes, hey Thumbs, is it just me or are the PlayStation Eye and Project Natal super, super creepy? We're being asked to buy a machine, hook it up to the internet, and attach a camera that's pointed into our living room. Before I do that, I'd like to know exactly what software is running on it and probably insist that it be open source. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy nut, but don't these games have layers and layers of middleware and DLC with all sorts of nooks and crannies to hide a subroutine to spy on me? How long until someone tries a facial recognition DRM scheme? We're probably years away from anything really insidious happening, but I think we're going to have to draw a line someplace, and I feel like closed platform with internet access and camera pointed at me is probably where I'm going to draw my line. Anyway, thanks for the radcast. I gotta go now. My wife is having a baby. That's the best end.
It is joined his inventory slot, apparently.
Well, right.
I don't know if I share this concern personally.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's one. This is one of those things that some people just sometimes get like up in arms about, I guess, and I think that it might sort of be accelerated by the internet, but also, really, I don't think it's anything to worry about. If anything like that ever happened and ended up getting through, like
exposed so quickly
exactly.
It's either a first party thing, which in which case it would be completely insane, and if someone found it, a huge company would go down, or it's a third party thing that goes through certification without someone noticing, at which point everyone would also freak out, and that person would be destroyed. So,
right.
yeah, what? You know.
And, you know, if that ever happens, I mean, there are at least three consoles plus PC. Like, they're not all going to do that at the same time. If any one of them does it, the nature of the market and competition means if, you know, if someone does this heinous thing and turns it into their console and enough people are bothered by that, like, it's not like there's a monopoly. You know what I mean? It's not right. like you only have one
worst
choice of
PR in the
right,
world.
Exactly.
That console would be completely demolished in seconds. Fox right. News would have 30,000
right.
segments
yeah, exactly.
by
right.
noon tomorrow.
Right.
It would be a,
right.
actually, maybe not Fox, but
Nancy Grace would talk about how all your children are going to be stolen
but,
by pedophiles.
Yeah.
And
also, Microsoft is collecting photos and 3D geometry of your genitalia.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, also, people right now, like, especially people who were born like in the 90s, I guess, now, as a matter of course, apparently broadcast like the most ridiculously like mundane and or private moments just on fucking YouTube all the time.
Yeah.
So I think probably we're already in an age where horrible like horrible ways of living a life might be a reality.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that I mean, you guys, at least Chris, I know you've read Transmetropolitan, the comic.
Yeah.
It's just kind of not shocking anymore.
No, it's not. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, that book is weird now.
Yeah.
So I don't think that we're worried about being spied on by that, but fortunately you don't have to buy any of those peripherals.
Right.
Unless you want to be right. spied on.
Yep.
Mark Payne writes in
and drive a car with your hands.
When I read Mark Payne, I almost Payne. Completely unintentionally added a 3 to the end of it. Mark Payne 3
writes from his dumpster.
Yeah. This is the guy who wrote us last week about Hearts of Iron 3 and we had no answer for him.
Oh, shit.
He follows it up with, "Hey guys, thanks for reading my email on the latest show.
Glad you
the
guys Hearts- played it this week."
Yeah, right. The Hearts of Iron games probably aren't for everyone, although personally I've found them as addictive as the Civ games. Hearts of Iron 3 isn't out yet, but it should be out later this year. If you're interested, the development diaries make for interesting reading and give an idea of the complexity and scope of the Hearts of Iron games, and he links them, and I'll put those in the thread, and I did read some of them, and it was really interesting. It's a, you know, World War II era strategy game, and it looks pretty cool. I don't know. Nick looks like something you might theoretically be interested in, I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems interesting. I don't know. And development diaries are always cool. That reminds me. Someone, I think, sent us an email last week. I forget if we read it or not. Mentioning, because we were talking about Civilization 4 for a while, and the end of the full Civilization 4 manual, there's like 20 pages or so by Soren Johnson, the lead designer of that game, about all of the design decisions, or a lot of the major design decisions made from Civ 3 to Civ 4. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good read. It's written really easily.
That reminds me as well that Soren has a blog that everybody should read because he's usually got some good stuff on there.
Yeah,
but his most recent post, well, I shouldn't say that. As of a couple of days ago, I think it was the 7th that he posted it. It was maybe the day after we released our podcast. But he posted a series of slides from a speech that he gave at Stanford, which is his alma mater. And he didn't include many notes, so you sort of have to fill in the blanks. But it is interesting what he was getting at. I mean, there were some pretty interesting. That were sort of tangentially related to some of the things we were talking about. So I think people should check that out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff covered, so I don't want to talk about it too much, but it's pretty interesting. So
that's cool.
If you're interested you're interested in more Civ stuff, check out that.
He's an interesting guy. He also is one of our alternating design columnists for Game Developer Magazine.
Right, yeah.
And we end up sometimes reprinting his stuff on Gamma Sutra, and I think we give him permission to sometimes put it on his own blog. Like, I think a lot of times that stuff will end up on his blog anyway.
Yeah,
he's cool. He's a really interesting guy. He works for Maxis now.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on Spore. Let's see what else we have here. Well, we have another Civ 4 email, but it's really long, and I'm sorry. I think we're probably gonna have to just skip that right now. God, Vincent Graves writes, "What is game?" Thanks.
We read that.
Yeah.
So what are you encouraging here?
Eric Frieden. Yeah, I know. I'm horrible.
It's terrible reinforcement.
Eric Frieden writes, "Jake Rodkin, choreographer. As I finished the first episode of Tales of Monkey Island, I noticed a certain Jake Rodkin is not only listed as UI designer and web designer, but also choreographer. What up with that? Is Jake a dancer? Is he wearing a tutu?" Well, yeah. Jake, are you a dancer? Are you wearing a tutu? These questions and more need answering.
Yes and yes.
Oh, man.
I know.
Photos will be in the downloadable content thread.
At Telltale, there's a position called choreographer. It's basically it's basically sort of in-engine cutscene artist, but also basically any animated activity that isn't just a core piece of animation done fully by the animators is done by a choreographer in the Telltale tool. So like UI animations, weird camera stuff. It's an odd game engine. Maybe it's not. I don't really know how many game engines work, but that's why I'm credited as that, because I've done some animation and cutscene work in the game.
Knowledge.
The end. Video games.
Thanks.
Yep.
Jason Smith writes
in. I thought that email was going to go somewhere else, but it's like, Jake Rodkin is like, ugh.
Yeah.
He's Big Bird.
It was my turn to get shit on this week. So.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
You're next. Yeah. I'm screwed.
God, you can't even beat fucking whatever extreme stronghold castration dungeon in 20 minutes. You're some kind of baby.
That's what I'm going to write in.
Yeah. Nick Breedon.
Jason Smith writes, Dear Idle Thumbs Mailbag, which he spells M-A-L-E. I'd like to share some stuff with you. The other day, I was going to download the 3D Mark software, and instead of typing it incorrectly, I typed in 3D Merrick by mistake. I didn't even try to explain to my wife why I was laughing. Have you ever had a friend who says words when they burp? I did, back in the early 90s, and it's funny that his favorite thing to burp vocalize was baboo. I can no longer hear the word boost without giggling a little bit, especially when my wife bought a six-pack of this nutrition drink called Boost. It figures the stuff made me sick. There's a little store here in Memphis that sells mostly hippie wear and stuff. Like, what's the name of the store, you ask? Wizards. Thanks, Jay Smith. Yeah, as I was reading this, I'm like, this is Andy Rooney doing an Idle Thumbs routine. That was a weird email. Thanks, Jay.
Anyway, fortunately, there's a wizard store.
Yeah. And did we ever put the picture of the Wizard Smoke Shop in San Francisco? I forget if we put that up.
No.
I don't think we did. Steve and I found a smoke shop called The Wizard, and we took a picture of it.
Sweet.
Yep.
Wizard.
Simon Van Alphen writes, Game designers are always ready to proudly proclaim that they only play a game for an hour, maybe two, certainly no more than three, before understanding the principles of it and find no need to play any further. So when the last time they experienced a game ending was in high school and have only experienced beginnings, since it can't be unexpected that by then they have no idea how to make an actual ending. When the longest gameplay arc they have knowledge of is one, possibly two, certainly no more than three, it can't be unexpected that games with bigger, longer systems fall by the wayside, can it? I certainly can't imagine the creator's experience in their medium not affecting their creations in the medium. He goes on with this a little longer, and then it certainly is no wonder that shorter games are better these days, as well the designers know after all. Kind regards, Simon Van Alphen. I think that might be a little unfair. I mean,
I mean, there's probably an amount of truth to it, but I think it's also
before,
way harsh.
But
I don't know if game designers proudly proclaim that. Like, I feel like maybe they do, but it seems like you'd have to be a little bit of a jackass to proudly proclaim that you have mastered the concept of a game after only playing 3 hours of it. Yeah. I mean, that said, it's probably true that a lot of core systems can be figured out in 3 hours of a game. That doesn't who in the world says well. Well, thanks, game, but...
You know who says that? Jake Rodkin, choreographer.
That's true. I do say that. Actually, I say, I'm terrible for only playing 2 hours of this game. I know I'm missing out on this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult. This is something that every gamer, I'm sure, has noticed a million times, but it is frustrating that how difficult it is to play a lot of games and actually complete them. I mean, you know, game designers should theoretically play a lot of different types of games and different genres of games and different examples of games within whatever genre they're making or other genres. And it's really hard to do that and complete games.
Yep.
Like, you kind of have to almost choose one.
You know what, though? I'm just going to say, truth be told, I think most people throughout the entire history of gaming did not beat most games. I don't think it's a modern phenomenon.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
The people who are still around, listening to Idle Thumbs, posting on NeoGAF and Something Awful, who played games as kids and are still playing them, are the wheat that are left over that used to beat the shit out of games and still do, whereas the chaff who did not complete is the entire fucking rest of the world.
Yeah,
so I don't think not finishing games is a new phenomenon. No. I, as a kid, never finished games.
I'm not sure it's necessarily a bad thing either.
But I mean, I don't know. I'm not making a
judgment. No. I know. I mean, I know.
Like, game designers don't finish games these days.
people don't finish
people games. Don't finish games yeah. ever. Yeah. No, I mean, some people obviously do finish games, but
yeah. But if you talk to developers about this, like stat tracking, and when
I was just gonna say the other game that I've been playing this week instead of along with Mega Man 9 is The Legend of Zelda, which I never beat.
Yeah.
I played the crap out of that game as a kid.
I think very few people, relatively speaking, did.
I beat Link to the Past when I was slightly older. I think the only
Zelda game I ever beat was Wind Waker.
Yeah.
And that was with you, years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, whatever. I'm playing through Zelda now because I never beat it. The number of people in the world who beat Zelda who don't, you know, regularly talk about games...
There are probably very low. Few games that have endings that are satisfying enough to where when I complete them, I'm happy that I completed them.
Yeah, exactly.
So for me, it's not necessarily like, I didn't complete this game. I feel really bad about it. The more I think about it lately, the more I go, you know, I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate that games don't, but it's not that surprising. It's not all that surprising that a developer isn't hitting that perfect, you know, hour mark where you specifically are going to play to reach conclusion and feel satisfied.
I think making a 50-hour game that is satisfying beginning to end has always been hard.
Yeah.
It's almost a catch 22, you know? I mean, it's like, by the nature of a game, if it really is that great, I mean, you could theoretically play the mechanic for an indefinite amount of time and keep enjoying it.
Right.
And so you're almost damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, if you make a game that has a really good, satisfying arc, and then you get to the over, you run the risk of players being like, man, that was, I could keep, if you didn't do anything to frustrate them, maybe they just don't want to stop playing. Even if your story wraps itself up well, the thing that they were enjoying at the most base level was probably the gameplay mechanics. Right. And they probably could have just kept playing those until they got tired of them. And then if you have a game that just ends, either goes on forever, then the person gets tired of it, or if it just goes down the toilet at the end, then they get frustrated by it. And it's really, I mean... having a convergence of like the narrative arc of the game and the gameplay and the amount of time until you get tired of it, but not, you know, but
yeah. You'd rather a game got out while it could and left you wanting more than,
I personally would.
Died on the toilet.
Right. If I had to choose one of those. Yeah. I mean, if I think about the games that I have been pretty satisfied with in the last few years, they tend to be, I mean, we were talking about this last week, you know, I mean, talk about the Half-Life games and Portal and stuff like that, where, you know, when you can actually have that memory of the complete arc and actually have that complete end capped experience, it's really nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's rare.
All of that said, go ahead. You mean something.
No, go ahead. No.
I was going to just stop talking about this, but.
Oh. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's great that we have memories of Half-Life games, but so few games are Half-Life to me that it's if I'm playing a mechanic that I'm enjoying and then I stop playing that mechanic, to me it's like, all right, you know, there wasn't going to be anything at the end there that I'm really going to miss all that much. I mean, even games with fairly ambitious stories, most of the time, the resolution to me is not.
But I mean, you're saying games where you weren't that into the mechanics. I mean, there are games where I have been really into the mechanics, and they just weren't.
I am saying games that I'm those games that are good.
Oh, okay. You
know,
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. I hope, you know, at some GDC someday, someone will present some amazing presentation that solves this problem for everyone. Probably not, though.
Yeah. The one last thing I was going to say is, as someone who works at a game company and doesn't play enough games, I think it is completely fair to say that game developers probably should play more games and should make more of an effort to finish them than they do on average. On the flip side of the coin, practically that is kind of hard because, like, if you make tires all day, the last thing you want to do is come home and play around with, like, melt rubber in your garage. So, you know, it's...
That's what I do every day.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I used to work making websites, and the last thing I wanted to do was do anything on the internet. And now that I'm working at a games company, I'm updating a website once a week and doing a podcast. So, playing a lot of video games. That said, totally fair point. There's probably a sort of grossly large piece of a pie graph of game developers who just played less games than they talk about knowing about games. Wow, grammar.
Woo! All right. Brian Berkelman, who's written us many times, writes in and he says, the game's first patch makes the last level easier. It's not going to take the bad taste out of your mouth, but it's something. Also, you can change the difficulty between levels. Did you do that? In a kind of hilarious thread from the developers forum, that's what they suggest to do. That's amazing. I mean, I don't know. To me, that completely. So
as you approach the end of King's Bounty, you should on the same curve. You should be lowering the difficulty level as you go.
Oh, this is Trine.
Oh, Trine. My bad.
I don't think there is any difficulty level in King's Bounty.
Yeah, I don't care about King's Bounty.
but yeah, I don't know. It's funny to me about Trine that they're like, well, you should change the difficulty level there. Like, what? Oh, well, you could have done that, like in the game logic. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, and there's an achievement called Better Than the Developers for beating that level on very hard without dying. So,
okay.
He also says that, man, this is coincidental here. He says, the first thing that came to my head when you talked about games with horrible endings is RPGs. I have save games right before the end of every Final Fantasy I own, and I've learned to cope with the fact that I'll never finish great games like Persona 3. But the one that hurts me most is Mario and Luigi, partly because I was enjoying it so much, and I totally could have beat it if I got the dodges right. RPGs get away with it because there's a very simple answer, except in Mario and Luigi, to get past choke points, level grinding. I know I could totally finish those games someday, but I never will, and that sucks. RPG designers are horrible demons. oh man, and then here's this. Oh, and word of warning, that King's Bounty you're enjoying so much apparently has a terrible end game. So, it's so true. Oh, this is the guy who linked to Rock Paper Shotgun. So yeah, that's why I read that Rock Paper Shotgun post. All right, one more, and then we should probably wrap it up. Jeez, we're getting a lot of email. Oh, man, this is actually, I can't not read this. Kevin Quinn writes, hello, thumbs and other assorted appendages. Allow me to open this email by expressing my fondness for a cast, as I understand that's what's traditionally done. That said, I'm disappointed in how quickly you guys forget the contents of your own site's lower regions. Attached is a clip from the original UK-only Idle Thumbs podcast dated May 13th, 2006. Just in case a copy no longer exists on the Thumb server, which I think it doesn't.
I've got him.
I thought I'd send you this clip to help satisfy Richard Piotrowski's every Bronstring-related desire. Now, permit me to close my mail by encouraging you to keep up the good work you do, which is good. Keep up the work you do, which is good. Kevin, a.k.a. Horticulture Tycoon, who I recognize from the forums. Yes, this guy included a sound file of Merrick Bronstring impersonating Arnold Schwarzenegger, which... to me, sounds less like Arnold Schwarzenegger than regular Merrick Bronstring does. So, we'll play that right now.
And also, though, have you ever noticed how Merrick, would you care to do an impression of this?
Shut up! Shut up! Shut
up! There's no difference.
I am Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, I don't have that soundbite.
that's disappointing.
I thought that was used by.
Shut up.
And there it is, Merrick Bronstring, ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, on that note, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games.
Trine.
So this is James Spafford.
And this is Merrick.
And this
Bronstring.
Is
Merrick Bronstring.
Video game.
Hello there.
Hey. Oh, hey, didn't see you there.
Yeah, we decided to record a bonus blast addendum. Yeah.
It's official title, bonus blast addendum.
Yeah. I guess so. I don't know how to start this off, but...
I don't know.
I heard you guys went to California Extreme.
Yeah, so we were at California Extreme, and Nick must have seen this earlier. I didn't see it till the end. As I was leaving, I saw one of those big, you know, it was a shooter game, one of the ones with a big device you can sit down
apparatus.
In. It's got the big apparatus and the big chair and, I don't know, probably force feedback and, like, big gun to hold and all that stuff. And it was...
A pedal.
It was Far Cry Instincts, Trouble in Paradise.
Yeah.
And Nick, you played it, right?
No, I didn't play it.
You just watched someone play it?
Yeah, I just observed.
And this game was?
The whole game was a turret sequence.
So, basically, this game was invented for us to poop on.
Yeah.
It's a Far Cry game, for one thing, so we're going to talk about it anyway.
Right.
But it's from the Far Cry Instincts line, which we love. The sound system destroying Far Cry Instincts.
The worst of all. And then it was a turret sequence. Yeah. So they pretty much, this is a trifecta that they've scored.
It's also apparently a hilariously best peripheral heavy arcade game that is just a...
Yeah, that's just turrets from Far Cry.
You have a gas pedal, though, right? So you must be able to drive around and shoot a guy.
Did it have a gas pedal?
Wait, you weren't there.
I thought you said it had a pedal.
I was fucking kidding.
I was envisioning the crazy like fishing, like steering cabinet from that old Penny
arcade.
Actually,
there were some pretty crazy.
No, it does have it. I mean, there is a big, huge apparatus that you sit in.
Maybe there was a pedal. There was probably a pedal.
There are like four pedals.
For like taking cover and stuff, probably.
Yeah. What,
a cover mode pedal?
Never played that?
Do games have a cover mode?
Yeah,
pedal?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't play games.
That's super
common.
Super common in arcade games.
Sorry, it totally has that. Far Cry, play it.
It was something else. I was really amazed that it was made. It's weird that companies still make arcade games sometimes. I mean, I know it's not that weird, but
yeah,
I mean,
like Half-Life, the arcade game.
Right, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's, and that was directly targeted at Japan, where I suspect, the arcade culture is probably at least somewhat stronger.
The one time I went in an arcade in Japan, well, I went in several ones. Every time I saw the Half-Life arcade game, nobody was playing it. It was like one machine that was completely avoided.
It's funny. I always see, not always, but I've seen numerous examples of Japanese designers, when asked what games are influential to them, they'll mention like Half-Life or other first-person shooters. And be like, no one in my country really plays these, though. I don't know. I think they're really cool. I always find that really fascinating, that I've seen numerous Japanese designers say that, and then those games just have never, ever, ever developed any kind of popularity in that country.
You need to just fly over like a C-47 filled with copies of Half-Life and low-budget PCs and
Well, you know what's funny?
You
know what's funny is that...
All right.
Jake just had the most amazing, horrified impression.
That brings bad images. You don't. as Americans, you don't leaflet Japan with information. You don't do that at this point. I don't think that would go over that well.
I'm trying to be politically correct on the Idle Thumbs podcast.
But you know what's funny is that I think it's Taito. Like, I think there's currently one of the major arcade boards is made by Taito, and I think it's Capcom uses it for like Street Fighter and stuff. It's a PC. Like, you could build that thing on Newegg. It uses completely standardized like motherboard, CPU, GPU, RAM. It's literally a like computer. And so I mean, you probably could get PC games running on those things fairly easily. I don't know.
Can you find a torrent of the Half-Life arcade port?
That's a good question. I have no idea. That's funny. But I do know that...
I mean, download it from Steam.
But I mean, I do know that, for example, the Street Fighter PC conversion is basically the arcade game. I mean, it's the same code. It just presumably has... You know, they
more
did testing for compatibility and stuff. By the way,
and you can do move swaps.
God bless the fucking PC community. They are already in full force with Street Fighter, which has been out for like a day at the time of this recording. There are some amazing videos of people swapping out the move sets between different characters and creating and just taking videos of them. Like, there was my favorite one is a swap between Zangief and Sakura, and the best part is I didn't realize this was going on at first, but it's obvious in retrospect. The face muscles and bone structure, they don't match up correctly when you swap them. So Sakura ends up looking like a monkey face. And then also it's great just seeing Zangief have – most of the moves are not very gender specific in Street Fighter really, but they always have little flourishes that are.
Right.
And seeing Zangief do a little dainty kind of pose like for a split second before he launches into a move or like before he does his victory pose is pretty amazing. Also, one of Sakura's moves looks like a Russian dance and makes it incredibly appropriate when played as Zangief. So anyway, this shit's pretty hilarious.
Far Cry Instincts.
That's Far Cry Instincts. That's what we think about that game.
What a weird Far Cry game.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Zangief? I didn't see that coming at all.
Way to go, Clint Hawking.
Clint Hawking, personal project of his, the arcade version of Far Cry Instincts, Trouble in Paradise. Yeah,
there were some pretty amazing pedal games, though.
Like what? At the show or in general?
Yeah. Well, there was the bike peripheral that.
What the hell was that?
Yeah, it was just a seat with like two pedals, like a bike, and it was hooked up to one game, which was there was a giant screen. And you were basically pedaling like a Leonardo da Vinci like rudimentary
flying machine
thing. And then the other one though was a pinball machine hooked up to pedals. And then there was some like strange
science experiment going on, like a Tesla coil.
Yeah, like what?
This like sparking. I took a picture of it. And I couldn't snap a picture right as the sparks were going. But this guy was riding this stationary bike. creating electric sparks while playing pinball. Could he not launch the ball unless he got burned calories? Like, I didn't understand what was going on.
Sounds awesome.
And the guy didn't explain it. He just was laughing a lot. Yeah. So I don't...
He was actually being electrocuted.
Yeah. This is phase one of the horrible video game peripheral cyborg. Testing it out at California Extreme. So that happened. That was really weird.
Yeah.
And he kept looking at us. Yes, it's really weird.
Yeah.
He was trying to mouth help me.
He kept looking at us and laughing as he was pedaling away.
Was it like what kind of laugh was it? Because I'm picturing the douchebag laugh from The Big Lebowski. Like, you know, the
The friend of Maude.
The video artist guy. Yeah, it's a laugh.
No, it wasn't that ostentatious. It was more of a it was a big, deep belly laugh. Like, yeah, right, yeah.
What? He's doing the Return of Ganon laugh? Yeah. As referenced earlier? Also, I think that's Soda Popinski. Also,
then he was like, dribble, dribble.
What the hell is this guy?
So, yeah, that was a strange moment.
Yeah.
And that was right next to the Far Cry machine.
Right.
Those were right next to each other. So that was a weird...
He was actually... It was a video game house of horrors.
Yeah, he was actually powering the Far Cry machine. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
So were you, was one... too bad you guys weren't playing Far Cry, because one of you sitting in that cabinet playing Far Cry, like, turreting it up, and then looking next to you and seeing a guy sort of plugged into this crazy, like, Victorian nightmare, like, peddling machine going, it would be something out of Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's California Extreme in a nutshell. It sounds pretty fucking extreme.
Yeah, go to it next year. These horrors, pleasures, and more await you.
Yeah.
Is that all we have?
Yeah, we're done with the second half of this, the third half.
Yeah. Bonus half. Okay. Questions at ourthumbs.net. Video game. So we're back again. Hey, guys. Time for addendum two.
Yeah, we actually have electric addending. Boogaloo.
Second entry in the appendices of
in our ongoing franchise.
Yeah.
We were incorrect. The game is actually Far Cry Instinct's Paradise Lost.
Yeah.
Which is
so it's actually part of the Dante's Inferno cycle.
Lineage. Yeah, cycle. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So this actually is an amazing combination of every single thing that we ever talk about too much, all in one horrible arcade game.
Yeah.
If you thought we couldn't shut up, like, so, about Dante's Inferno, turrets, Far Cry... Someone needs to just buy us this cabinet. We will accept. We will accept this, and we will record live from within the Far Cry Instincts Paradise Lost cabinet every week. If someone can point us to where one could be obtained for free.
Also, we have a picture of it, so I'll try to put that up. And the controller really is an actual turret. I mean, you've got
chain gun.
It's actually
sort of strangely small.
Yeah,
kind of dainty.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a beachhead game. This is called Far Cry. What were you saying about Joust 2?
I was not aware of this. There was Joust 2, Survival of the Fittest. And that for some reason, at the bottom of the screen in big letters, it says The Blues.
Yeah,
and that
just
kind of hangs out there.
Yeah.
I have a picture of Nick playing this.
Yeah.
You got the blues?
Yeah. I kinda,
Nick had the blues.
I was playing the fucking game.
He definitely had the goddamn blues. Yeah. He was.
So you were not the fittest?
No.
No, I
was
did not
surviving.
Does it say the fittest at the top? Like, if you're at the top, then you and then if you're at the bottom, you have the blues.
It's a sliding scale. Yeah. I'm midway between the fittest and the blues.
Yeah.
The fittest and the blues. Man. A decent title.
Yeah, that's the name of the second appendix, if you were curious.
You know what they also had? The Act. Are you guys aware of this?
I am now.
It's a crazy cell animated, like actual, like almost Dragon's Lair style cell animated arcade game that was made just a couple years ago as an arcade game for some reason. I don't know why they didn't also release this on PC or consoles. And it uses a dial to, like every scene... You've got your character, and it's not like Dragon's Lair in that it's all quick time based, like discrete button presses at a certain time. You have to use a dial to go back and forth between different emotions or different places on the screen, and you have to find the right midpoint between them and kind of maintain it for however long. I don't know. It's interesting. We're way over our regular time now, so you can look it up. But it's called The Act, and it's an arcade game, and they had one here, and it's the first time I've ever seen it in person.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Also, there was a game called Super Don Quixote.
I know.
And that
know,
was also that. Like a Dragon's Lair well. Style thing. That was like 100% yeah. Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, it was.
And there's a dash for some reason between the key and the ote. So I guess they want it to be pronounced Don Quixote or Don Quixote. I don't know. That was a quick odd choice of a dash there.
It was hyphenated in some internal documents, yeah. And then the cabinet art guy just really fucked it up.
Right. And there was also a game called Mad Alien, which was like a driving game. So I don't know if that's referring to like illegal aliens. Road rage. Or like, yeah. I don't. That was weird.
The opening crawl is in the first person. Like I flew to Earth to avoid the horrible traffic. Little did I know. Oh man, nice fire missile.
Yeah.
God, that would be an article that I wish the Idle Thumbs site is currently offline, but there's a really stupid, amusing, self-amusing article from when we went to the Classic Gaming Expo in like 2005.
2004.
Four? Ugh. Yeah. That article is not on the internet right now, though, so I'm not even talking about
it. Should
about
be, it. Though. It will be soon, eventually. Yeah. There were also a lot of arcade games that were just made up of single nonsense words, like Targ and Gorf. And Klax, and Puyon, and Atax, and Varkon, and Akaar. So that was a theme, I guess. Yeah. Nick and Jake were just snickering over something.
You really want to know what we're snickering at? Like, Nick showed me a picture on his iPhone from California Extreme of a lit-up button on an arcade cabinet that says Boost. So maybe we're done.
Yeah.
That might be for fun. Real.
Oh, also I have a picture of Brides is Brides. That was the subtitle of the Three Stooges game.
Three Stooges
game.
Is Brides is Brides.
Brides is Brides.
All right. So.
Oh, also I got to level 17 in Klax, and I didn't cry. So.
You gotta stop talking.
I'm
Here's
sorry.
That pedal thing.
Here's our horrible preview. Oh man, there's also this crazy Namco game that used levers. Anyway, whatever. Jake is signaling to stop.
Yeah.
All right. Bye guys. For real.
And then there was this TIE Fighter.
Video game.
So we're back with the third addendum.
Video game. Video game.
Brasserie. Man Brasserie.